here Thursday. It is Thursday, the 5th of August, 2021. Welcome into the Stu Peters Show. My name is Stu Peters. Briefly mentioned Legal Action versus Newsweek and Politico yesterday. This all revolves around the First Amendment. This all revolves around the attack on the speech of particular influencers who have a set of values or opinions, who present a certain evidence that doesn't match the narrative of a certain set of globalists that then control the First Amendment. You see, for example, everybody today is talking about COVID-19, vaccines. Is it a shot? Is it dangerous? Who's dying from it? What about VAERS? I mean, our conversations revolve around what is heavy, what is hot, the push for the removal of your medical freedom, for example. But the question really has to be asked, if COVID-19 wasn't constantly advertised by the people who claim to be standing up for what's right, would you even really know of its existence? If unified non-compliance meant a billion global citizens refusing testing all at one time, refusing masking, refusing injections, would COVID-19 just go away? Has anyone anywhere in any country or inside of any government agency yet been able to even prove that a pandemic exists? Why aren't we having these conversations? Free speech isn't just something that we say. And in the absence of your ability to broadcast opinions, concerns, discontent, ask questions, present studies, share articles, or even just post pictures of your dog, no matter the size of your presence on social media, this is supposed to be an inherent right guaranteed to you by the Constitution of the United States, and that's just not happening. As a matter of fact, there is an opposition that is controlled in a calculated attack against that very thing. I'm not overstating this for hyperbole. We're in extremely dangerous territory, living inside of pivotal times of urgency, as Amendment 1 here in the United States, hanging by a thread, could change the scope of the entire planet. And we have ourselves really to blame as a result of an overall lack of resistance. There hasn't been a fight. Until now. Dr. Shiva is the inventor of email, the inventor of polymath. He holds 4 degrees from MIT. He's a world-renowned systems scientist, inventor, and entrepreneur. And if you follow him, you know about the lawsuit of the century. Again, that's not an overstatement. Imagine a lawsuit that quite literally wins back freedom. The first case in the United States of America that shows the government made big tech silence political speech. If you still believe me to be grandstanding for Dr. Shiva, let me just add, the presiding federal judge described Shiva's lawsuit as one of substantial constitutional consequences and that the lawsuit would likely become, quote, a law school exam in constitutional law. While the media blatantly ignores this historical legal action, we will not. Dr. Shiva, thank you so much for being here. You had a hearing yesterday, yes?
Yes, Stuart, it was a very interesting hearing. Yep, we had a hearing yesterday.
How'd it go? Bring us up to speed. So for those people that don't understand this, huge fight is going on. Tell us about it.
Yeah, the fight that's going on, Stuart, is our lawsuit is the first lawsuit of its kind because it's going at sort of the nucleus of what's actually going on. And if you look at people like Tucker Carlson, or even for that matter, Glenn Greenwald, nice guys, right? But they typically wait after a year or 2 years to cover something because if it's opportune for them to do it. And it's sort of unfortunate. They don't really focus on what's going on at that time, even though they know about it. So this is a problem because the media, both left and right, do not ever want to do what's right at the right time. They always wait when it becomes interesting news for them. So our lawsuit falls into that category that it's really going at the heart of things and it's bringing up things that'll expose the obvious establishment and the not so obvious establishment. So on October 30th of 2020, you know, in a 4-hour hearing where I represented myself against three lawyers, what emerged out of that hearing was that the government has set up an infrastructure to have VVIP access to social media companies like Twitter to shut down political speech. I was a canary in the coal mine who was tested with this infrastructure. I was running for United States Senate, and simply for challenging the state election director, the fact that they violated federal law, I was locked out of Twitter for 4 weeks. This is the grossest violation of the First Amendment. And it's amazing. I wrote to Tucker. Tucker did not cover it. He knows about me, right? Because he watches which way the wind blows. He's an entertainer. And we have to begin by really the reason I expose people like Tucker Carlson is the conservative right thinks he's like a hero, but he isn't. The reason nothing changes is because people like Tucker Carlson suck the energy out of the real movement. So Tucker didn't cover it, but it was a historic lawsuit because we exposed in a four-hour hearing that the government has set up an infrastructure to launder censorship through this portal. Now, the judge got it. It was a historic TRO hearing. He gave me all the terms of my preliminary injunction. He said, you will no longer contact Twitter. You will no longer interfere. But it was too late. By November 4th, I'd already lost a month. So I'm back on Twitter November 4th to February 1st. I'm tweeting away. By the way, Twitter never touched me. This is what's important to talk about. It wasn't Twitter. I've tweeted since 2011. But on February 1st, 2021 of this year, when I again shared these four email screenshots on my tweet exposing the violation of federal law by the government of Massachusetts, boom, within 17 minutes, I'm deplatformed. 17 minutes. That means what occurred in September 24th was not disconnected with what occurred on February 1st. Okay? So that continues. On February 4th, I went back into court. I brought this up to the judge. This time, the judge said, before I can give you complete relief, you need to bring in Twitter. So the judge ordered me the choice of bringing in Twitter. I never wanted to do that because I just saw them as sort of the slave at the end of this big enterprise. So we brought in Twitter. That went into a hearing for nearly 20 hours on May 20th to 21st. It was me representing myself against seven lawyers. Again, no media covered this. And in that lawsuit the night before and that hearing the night before May 19th, I had discovered four important documents called playbooks where all Americans can be branded as influence operators through a manual where they see your credibility, how much volume you have engaged. And I was per that manual branded as a high severity influence operator. And to those people, they put them into a category where they're monitored for the rest of their lives. All right. So these four manuals were submitted in court. The judge was amazed. As you said, on the 21st, he came in and he said, this lawsuit will more than likely become a law school exam in every constitutional law class. The issue is those who want to serve justice, are they wanting to really go at the heart of the issue? Or do they want to just put me back on Twitter? Okay. So on June 28th, we found something more interesting, the Long Fuse report, written again by a bunch of academics. The playbooks were written out of Harvard Belfer Center. And by the way, everyone can go to winbackfreedom.com. Everything's documented. Everyone should, by the way, donate $1 to support this. It's not like, Trump. By the way, Trump talks about the issue, a real issue. But he always delivers a fake solution. And I gave a lot of money to Trump. You probably supported him too. All right. But the real solution, whether it was election fraud, is the voting machines. No one ever went after that. And the real issue here is that over the last 2 to 3 years, the government has created an organization called CISA, Cybersecurity Infrastructure Security Agency, CISA. By the way, Trump signed that into law. All right. Which allows the government through a network of relationships, which our lawsuit has found in this long fuse report, it validates that I was being surveilled among the top six people in the world since 2020, June of 2020. And when that state election director, I was being essentially surveilled when she contacted them, I basically became on their hot blacklisted, ready for deplatforming on September 25th and deplatformed on February 1st. The state election director of Massachusetts is the one who helped create this infrastructure for laundering censorship through another person called Amy Cohen, who's at the National Association of State Election Directors. These are the defendants in the case. They all acted like Mickey the Dunces. They didn't even know each other. Our lawsuit discovered not only did they know each other, but they actually were architects of this enterprise. So what we discovered with the Long Fuse report, the playbooks, and the October 30th hearing, what emerged is the actual infrastructure. Non-governmental entities, unelected government officials out of elite places like Stanford and Harvard, essentially associated with Department of Homeland Security, have created an infrastructure where they can launder the censorship to non-governmental entities. So they can say, we didn't do it, they did it. All right? And our lawsuit has exposed exactly how during that September 20th to February 1st, I, as a U.S. Senate, I mean, the lawsuit's pretty simple. A United States candidate running for political office was silenced by the government because he criticized them. This is the grossest violation of the First Amendment. I'll repeat that again. A U.S. Senate candidate was silenced by the government for criticizing the government. This is why the United States, this is the foundational principle of the United States, the First Amendment. This is why immigrants came here. This is why my parents came here. And we have discovered over the last, you know, particular last 5 years during Trump. Trump is the one who signed CISA. And during this period is when the most draconian attack on the First Amendment has taken place. And it has happened because the left and the right have colluded together, Republicans and Democrats. This is not just, you know, the Republicans. It's all kabuki theater. You know what, the way I see the world right now, Stu? You ever watch A Godfather?
Yeah.
No, you know that scene where they're all sitting in the smoky room, all the dons?
Of course, yeah.
Okay. And they say, okay, you get New England, you get Long Island, you get Brooklyn.
Yeah.
Well, what they've done today is the dons sit around and they say, okay, you get the narrative of climate change. You get the narrative of talking about election fraud. Mm-hmm. You get the narrative of talking about medical freedom, but never solve it. So the Robert Kennedys get the medical freedom issue. The Donald Trump now gets election fraud. The AOCs get climate change. So what they do is they, there are real substantive issues in climate change, which is pollution. The real issues in election fraud is the electronic voting machines. The real issue with medical freedom is the fact it's the right medicine for the right person at the right time. But these
and
guys
racism,
don't do that.
And insert racism here, immigration there.
Right, right. So there is racism, but yeah. They don't talk about the real racists or people like Elizabeth Warren and the elites who perpetuate racism. They divide up black and white. That's racism. So they don't. So they take the real fundamental issues. And oh, climate change, you got to be a lefty to support, you know, climate, you know, and if you're a righty, then you support you're against election fraud. You see? So they split us into 50-50. Meanwhile, the American working class over the last 70 years has been destroyed. Close to $40 to $50 trillion has been transferred upward. The average American today is lucky if they have $400 in savings in their account. That's about 80% of Americans. So you have this nonsense taking place in Kabuki, you know, left and right. You have the Bernie Sanders on the far left, you know, who will attack Biden once in a way to keep people within the establishment. You have Trump who will attack McConnell. And that's the way it goes. The only way forward is we need to build a bottoms up movement of education where people understand that we need to move beyond left and right, beyond black and white. Working people must unite to build a bottoms-up movement.
I agree with that 100%. And I want to get to that bottoms-up movement in just a second, but I got to push back on just a couple of things that you said to get some clarification. So you said, you know, the Tucker Carlson narrative, I agree. I agree 100% that these people are talking about issues that are old and they're picked and they're timely and they address them only when. And I agree that that this issue that you raise in your lawsuit should be being talked about globally. But it's not. And I understand why to a certain extent. But is it so much Tucker or is it the oligarchs that control the network that he works for? How much leniency or leverage does he really have?
Well, what I'm saying is Tucker's a big boy. Does he make the hard choices to, you know, tell it like it is? He won't do that. He wants to have his country club life. Okay. The issue is until we build, because the problem is when you just talk about half of the truth, people keep having illusions that Tucker is going to eventually talk about it one day. Oh, we got to forgive him. And this is what we did with Trump. The day he got into office. I mean, I voted for him. I gave him money. He's going to lock her up. Nothing happened. Oh, something's going to happen. Something's going to happen. You see? Something's going to happen. Hold on. That was a Q movement. So the reality is that this is a way of sucking working class people to have hope. A lot of people voted for Trump, voted for Obama. Go ask them. Hope, right? So it's always about keeping the masses of people, not going neighbor to neighbor in a scientific way. Our truth, freedom, and health movement, we teach people the science of physics of how you build a movement. But without doing that, the goal is the establishment's real. The real enemy of the establishment is if we turn off our TVs and we go neighbor to neighbor and build a bottoms up movement. But as long as you give the hope of Obama or Trump or Tucker Carlson, oh, he's going to do something. And like you said, don't take this the wrong way. excuse him. Well, it's the oligarchs. No, Tucker's a big boy. I've made sacrifices in my life. You've made sacrifices. Why are we excusing them?
Yeah, no, I'm not taking anything the wrong way. I don't care about feelings. I care about
facts. No. What I'm trying to say is the excusing nature is what happens. Well, Bernie couldn't do that because, you know, he has to play within the system. Trump can't do that now, you know? And so if you put on an axis, a number of years of we're waiting, the suffering just increases of the masses of people. Why the hell should we wait?
So to tie up on the lawsuit side of things, your victory would mean what specifically?
We've already won. Let's put it the right now. The defendants are so upset they want to seal even the lawsuit, Stu. They want to seal the lawsuit. They want to seal the diagram that we discovered. Okay. So the issue is this: you have the court system and you have educating people. If you don't educate people, is what we found, and you just rely on the court system, you don't achieve the larger goal, which is to educate people, because the court systems will do what they want to do. One day, you know, they're supporting us. Another day, whoa, wait a minute, this is too much.
Is the court system lost completely? The entire judiciary, is it compromised?
Well, if you look at when the founders created the United States, the executive branch was done reasonably well. The legislative was, remember, but they still had a lot of lawyers. So the judiciary was still medieval. When you walk into a court system, you're literally walking into the 15th century still, okay? So the judiciary was designed it sort of lagged behind the advancement of the legislative and the executive branches of the government. So this is an important thing to understand, because the lawyer brotherhood, look, lawyer, you notice lawyers always put Esquire, ESQ at the end of it. You know what that means? It means nobility. It's one level above gentleman, one level below knight. The goal of the 1776 American Revolution was, no, we don't believe in monarchies and nobility anymore. But they always kept that hook in there, Stu. All right. So the modern nobility is a legal class, and they have protections that ordinary citizens don't. And that's the club that they built.
All right. So what is the end result, I guess, is, okay, it's, we've already won. They want to seal this.
What I mean, we've won, is that we have discovered all this infrastructure. What needs to happen now is people need to go to winbackfreedom.com, read those lawsuits, look at those things, and start sharing this.
Okay, so, but in the court of law, like as the layperson looks at it, in the court of law, do you anticipate a victory, a ruling?
Well, what the judge, if you look at what the judge has said since October 30th, he said, when the judge gave us the terms of the temporary restraining order, remember, judges don't like to tell the government what to do, right?
Right.
They only do it if you think they're going to win the larger lawsuit. And when he, if you go read the transcript, he said, more than likely, Dr. Shivaya Dre will show that state action was involved. That means Twitter was not acting like a private actor, okay? He's already there. The facts are overwhelming. I mean, you had the state election director using a VIP portal and infrastructure contacting Twitter, and Twitter jumped when they said to jump. And the state election director is on the executive committee of CISA's general coordinating committee. So she's not just an ordinary state election director. She is a force of the U.S. government telling Twitter. And you have to understand that Twitter needs its high valuations. Twitter needs Section 230. That's why they keep bowing down to the government, because they don't want Section 230 removed, because it gives them platform status, which gives them a 50x multiple of revenue. If you go to Silicon Valley, if you're a publisher, you get 3x multiple of revenue, okay? So a $2 billion revenue generating company like New York Times is worth $6 billion. But a $1 billion revenue generating company like Twitter is worth $50 billion, okay? It's because of this random thing called platform. Well, the platform status is adjudicated through Section 230. So if Section 230 goes away, they lose their platform status, which is high valuation. So they're always going to bend over and bow down to especially government needs. So in this case, when the state election director, who I was criticizing, contacts Twitter, they jumped. So the judge is already there on it. Okay. Now you have to do the procedure, methods, the law, and all that. So while the lawsuit's going on, you know, I'm still a public figure. I still teach my classes on system science, right? So we're going to continue to, the key thing right now, Stu, is to educate the American public, because the American public needs to rip themselves away from both of these parties, left and right, Republican and Democrat, left wing and right wing, even whether it be Trump or Bernie Sanders. People need to recognize we need to build an independent movement. Without that, we're going to, in my view, we've lost the First Amendment. What our lawsuit shows is that we do not have the First Amendment anymore. So I want to stop people thinking, make America great again and let's fight for freedom. No, we've lost it. We have to think in a much more prudent way without rose-colored glasses. We are actually in prison. And the First Amendment has been lost and we have to now win it back. Without that attitude, we're going to think everything's hunky-dory. It isn't. Since 1970 till today, step by step and accelerated over the last 3 years with the creation of these things called playbooks and the Long Fuse Report, which confirms it, the American people in the age of technology have lost the First Amendment. I was a canary in the coal mine that they use this infrastructure to test. It says in this book, I was a canary in the coal mine, being surveillanced 24/7 by 4 hour call centers.
Hey, we blew through that break and I'm going to keep it. So we're just going to roll on. We've got another 9 minutes here now. So I don't want to rush anything. And I know that that doesn't seem like a very long time, but
Yeah. So what this Long Fuse report published in June of 15, it was almost very divine that it came out, is that it confirms 300 page report. I mentioned there 22 times that I was considered a repeat spreader, highly influential, with five other people.
I'm sure I'm there.
The problem is,
I'm sure I'm there. I mean, my name is probably on a list here.
You can go look at it, but it was tracking me as one of the top six repeat spreaders. Now, the problem they have with me, I'm not in the left or right camp. I'm a MIT PhD who actually looks beyond left and right on every issue. So they were surveilling me because they were probably very interested. Wow, this guy's, he puts out a tweet or a YouTube thing without being funded like Trump, without Breitbart, without Newsmax, who were the other three or four people. And he goes viral. So when that state election director saw me exposing her violation of federal law, she's like, oh my God, this is going to go viral. And it's against me. And I created this infrastructure. Let me call my friends to shut this guy down. So what's happened, what our lawsuit shows is that unequivocally, there's an infrastructure that's created where government can launder their censorship to, in fact, the book says right in here, it says in the opening pages of this book, we have a problem with the First Amendment because we can't silence domestic speech. So we need to centralize it and be able to use what they call non-governmental entities to fill the gap. And that non-governmental entity they created was a group called ISAC, I-S-A-C, which is part of a nonprofit called for Center for Internet Security, funded by Pierre Omidyar. Okay? So they architected this so the government could use a nonprofit as a conduit. So they don't like you. They report there. They do the quote-unquote research. They, you know, use the force of this enterprise. And Twitter says, okay, master, we'll do it. Okay? Because Twitter needs Section 230 immunity. So that's what's going on. That infrastructure is what we need to educate people on. And, you know, we have found all the people who are part of this infrastructure. All people who work in the Ivy League towers of Harvard and Stanford, and none of us elected them, Stu. They think they know better. And this document says that we basically have to violate the First Amendment to control domestic speech against misinformation and disinformation, as though they're the overlords who get to determine that. Not in the marketplace
of ideas. That's how they're acting.
Ideas.
I mean, it's blatant. They're acting like that right out in front of us with no shame whatsoever.
We have allowed this to occur because we keep voting for scumbags on the left and the right, Republican and Democrat. The American people have allowed this because they forgot their history. The history is in the 1800s and the early 1900s, working class people rose up. And starting in the 1950s, the right wing, in order to attack bottoms-up working-class movements, they called them commies. So the left wing created top-down unions. And that's the dialectic. Anytime working people unite bottoms-up, call them communists, Marxists. It's bullshit. And then, therefore, the left wing says, oh, come to us. We control you. So between 1940 to 1980 in the United States, nearly 50 million workers had 11,000 strikes. And during that period is when the American pie grew. starting in 1980, because of this left-right collusion, they destroyed the unions. There was no more bottoms-up movements. And between 1980 to today, there's been at most 900 strikes. And you know what's happened during that period? The American pie is split. A big pie for the 5% and a very little set of small little pie for the 85%.
All right, so let's
move on. No one discusses this.
Let's move into the
95%.
What is the solution?
There's only one solution forward, okay? And it's the same solution that has existed since the pyramids were built, since people have tried to fight for freedom. The slaves need to organize on their own. The slaves need to not listen to the Pharisees or the Sadducees or, you know, the pharaohs, right? It's got to come bottoms up. And we live in an age where we have access to education. So in the modern world, the not so obvious establishment is more insidious than the obvious establishment. So if you look at the eagle of the, you know, the head is the establishment. One shoulder of the establishment is what you call the Republican establishment. The other shoulder is a Democrat establishment, you know, the McConnells and let's say, you know, the Bidens. But the wings of that eagle are the thing that keep people manipulated. The left wing of the Bernie Sanders and the AOC, they trap in, you know, working people and blacks, right? And the right wing now with Trump waves it once in a while when they need to talk about some stuff. And then they, and once in a while, they'll attack McConnell. But all along, they're cha-ching, 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 raising money.
Right. No, I okay? understand. I get that. I believe that 100%.
So the way out of this is we have to go back and educate people, which is what I do every Monday night. We have to, number one, teach people the nuclear physics of how to build a movement. You can't build a movement just by just going out there, just like you can't build a bridge without understanding Newton's laws. You can't build an airplane without Bernoulli's principle. Don't you think there are fundamental laws on how you build a movement? And that's what my life has discovered, or my life journey. And those fundamental principles are what people need to learn. They need to understand history. And those principles are governed by scientific principles, where I teach that, you know, in 2 to 3 hours. You don't need to go to MIT.
We agree on this, is that this isn't about left and right and Democrats, Republicans. This is not about black and white. This isn't about even, you know, the rich and the poor. This is the division is absolutely what is required for these people, our common enemy, to be able to continue enslaving us to prevail. The question is, when I look at somebody, you know, the uninformed twerking on a police car in Chicago, or, you know, this white guy over here burning down that police precinct in the name of, you know, social justice. And I mean, this is a movement that has been created under the laws of the movement that you're referring to by the person or the group of people that we are working so hard to defeat. So how do you, does your class teach how to organize millions and millions of people? Because clearly we're not going to be able to build a movement unless we have the cooperation of the masses. And I'm talking about global citizens.
So, Stu, first of all, you should come take the class. You need to understand the dynamics of, there's a physics here, and it's called system science. You can apply the science of systems to understanding your body. You can understand to understanding a healthcare system or the physical system. I used to teach, you know, 40 years of my life have been spent in understanding systems. You know, a couple of years ago, I wrote this book called System and Revolution. It's not to push this book, but in about 100 pages, in about 2 hours, everyone can understand the science of systems. It is a core of the core. They should be teaching it at kindergarten. In fact, Jay Forrester, who just died at 99 and is a professor at MIT, he wanted to make sure kids at the kindergarten level learn system science before even reading, writing, and arithmetic. System science shows you the interconnections of the parts. And there is a science to it, just like a language to it. And I've been able to distill it down. So number one, without the knowledge of system, by the way, if you go to Pierre Omidyar's website, Democracy Fund, who funded this report, okay? You know what he says? We need to learn system thinking. There's about 8,000 elites in the world who understand the science of systems. And they don't want you to learn it. They want you to just flail all around, talking about all sorts of stuff, medical freedom, this, that, but never understanding the science of systems. Without the science of systems, it's like natives with bows and arrows shooting at people who have nuclear weapons. That's where we're at.
So can we, and I've got 1 minute left, can we grab the attention of the uninformed or the people who really believe in something that doesn't exist? That's what we're looking at here. People believe in things that don't exist. Can we really get to these people?
Yeah. So the way you get to them is, once you understand system science, you'll understand there's a phenomenon called self-organizing systems. You don't need to go convince all the people who are never going to agree with you, which is about 30%. The 50% of the world are fence sitters. The 20% are change agents. Those 20% need to be educated on these fundamental scientific concepts, which really didn't exist until the 1930s. So our goal is to educate around 50,000 of those people. And then you create the wave. It's not about trying to educate people who are not interested in getting educated. You have to go at the change agents. So join us, you know, Monday, go to truthfreedomhealth.com. You know, I have, my life journey has been about figuring this out. I was very fortunate to go to places like MIT, you know, be an engineer, be a scientist, get all these degrees. But the ultimate innovation beyond the invention of email is what I've created on this platform for Truth, Freedom, and Health. We have created an educational platform and it's decentralized. But without this knowledge, people will be flailing, Stu. They won't get it. They'll just be trying this. Okay, let me go to Obama today. Let me try Trump tomorrow.
It's frustrating.
And yeah, there is a science.
All right.
It's like building a bridge and you just throw bricks together, it falls down. And
where do I go to get in your class? Because I want to get into this thing. So where do I go?
Go to truthfreedomhealth.com. Truthfreedomhealth.com.
All right. And if anybody else is interested in joining me, I'm going to be there.
Yeah, so that's one thing. And everyone should support this lawsuit. You know, just give $1. And that's part of building this movement, the wave. It's not like give me $100,000. If you give one, great, because the goal is to let people understand the central pillar, truth, freedom, and health is freedom. Because without freedom, without the ability to discourse and have debate, you can't do science to get to truth. And without freedom and truth, you don't get health.
One of the most
you can't fight for truth or freedom.
One of the most real conversations that I think I have had in recent times, and I appreciate your candid. I really do. You're an honest person and I can feel it. I believe it. I support you 100%. I'm going to be in your class and thank you for bringing it to our attention. We really appreciate your time and being here today and hope that you'll come back again sometime.
Definitely. Thank you for the opportunity. Be well.
Of course. Dr. Shiva, everybody. Dr. Ben Edwards, an MD from Baylor, coming up next. Don't go anywhere. The Stu Peters Show continues in just 60 seconds. Great guest right there, Dr. Shiva. He's welcome back here anytime. I do not agree with everything that he says. He would not agree with everything that I believe. I'm going to attend the class, though. Absolutely. The whole purpose of this show is to be able to talk about these things openly, have friendly debates, okay? Not burning down buildings, not throwing insults at each other or yelling, but to have the conversation and throw ideas on the table. That is the purpose of the People's Bullhorn, and we will continue to do that. Go see my good friends over at Step On Socks. I have come to know the owners at Step On Socks personally, and I can tell you with 100% conviction through and through that they are 100% patriots. That's what they are. So when you go to steponsocks.com and you get the classic version, Biden, Obama, Pelosi, Gates, Fauci, all their names written on the bottom. I think it'll be ensconced in glass sometime somewhere. When you get that classic version, you can rest assured you're buying from Patriots. 100% Patriot designed red, white, and blue socks, a three pack for just $17.76. They have diversified. The Trust in God sock is my favorite. Get the Trust in God sock. You can step out sins all day long. Or how about the Trader Joe version? That's available. Step On Socks is also diversified. They sell physical silver there at steponsocks.com, as well as Second Amendment flags. We rely heavily on our Second Amendment. Get a Second Amendment flag. Let the whole world know that that is a right you will never let go of. Go to steponsocks.com right now. Get a three-pack for just $17.76. Check out the silver. Check out the flags. Make sure that you mention Stu Peters when you go to steponsocks.com. Mike Lindell coming up next. And Ben Edwards, Dr. Ben Edwards from Texas with comments from Baylor. Don't go anywhere. Stu Peters Show continues right now. Fear is a real thing. Fear overtakes people. It causes people to do things they would never normally dream of doing, like moving masses of people or convincing them to throw oxygen-inhibiting masks on their children's faces for 5, 6, 7, 8, 10 hours a day, even outdoors when they're exercising, people alone in the gym, alone in their cars, outside running. You see it everywhere. It just blows my mind that this is going on. Meanwhile, we have experts. We have medical doctors. We have PhDs. Scientists weighing in on all of this. From the inception of COVID-19, there has been this fear pandemic, is the real pandemic, just plaguing the entire world. And this is a global concerted effort to make sure that a needle goes into the arm of every living and breathing human being, including your kids. The push is unbelievable. It's incessant. We saw yesterday the president of the United States, the government, is using your tax dollars to pay influencers thousands of dollars to push this through TikTok so that your kids are warmed up to the idea of becoming inoculated in school. Can you trust the school nurse, for crying out loud? Or is your son going to come home or daughter with a new toy or some sort of a reward saying, oh, look, well, how did you get that? Well, look, I got a Band-Aid. I mean, these are real fears that people are dealing with every day, and it just shouldn't be like that. I mentioned the other day the fear of being attacked. If you're one of those experts, one of those scientists coming forward, weighing on your opinion. One of those people is Dr. Peter McCullough, who's now being sued as a result of his appearance on this program by Baylor Scott & White, a huge health system in Texas. Now, that huge health system in Texas is also on the same day that they announced to the press that they were going to be mandating this inoculation for some odd 50,000 people in that health system. They told the press about this lawsuit prior, by the way, to serving a legal complaint upon Dr. Peter McCullough. So you see where this goes. I mean, this is the narrative. This is pushing fear. This is trying to suppress the opinions of other medical professionals from coming forward. Well, I don't want to get sued. I don't want to get sued. I don't want to lose my job. This is a real thing. People are dealing with hundreds, millions of people, not hundreds of thousands, millions of people in this country are dealing with, if I don't get inoculated, I might lose my job. And it's not just a job for a lot of people, folks. This is a career. People go to school for a very long time. I don't know if you're aware of this or not, but nursing school, medical school, it's so competitive. Just getting in can take years of effort, preparation, studying, grades. I mean, the list goes on. The qualifications to get into these programs, and then they're so small, they're so limited. And then you finally get in only to realize you can't complete this. You can't even enroll. You can't come to campus unless you take this injection in your arm. It's just it's an incessant push. I got an email last night from another nurse that works in the Baylor Scott White medical system. She was telling me that there's no exemption for pregnant people. We have seen the attack on the ovaries, the reproductive systems. We don't know for certain what's in this. We have reported on several studies that have been corroborated by other scientists that these injections, which by the way, inserts are completely blank. That's unprecedented. That doesn't happen. The inserts are blank. There are talks and studies that show lead to graphene oxide. Patents that have been in existence forever. We talked to Dr. David Martin. We talked to a Pfizer whistleblower, a former Pfizer employee. I mean, everything points to poisonous cocktail. I just don't know. Joining me right now is Ben Edwards. He's a medical doctor from Texas. He's the founder and medical director of Veritas Medical in Texas. We really appreciate you being here. Your undergrad is at Baylor. You have a medical degree from UT Houston, residency at McLennan Hospital, or McLennan County Medical Education and Research Foundation, where you were the chief resident, a fellowship in integrative medicine. This is kind of an open dialogue because you're there. Dr. Peter McCullough has been attacked by this system. These shots are being seemingly forced on, 50,000 people? What say you?
Well, Stu, thanks for having me today. What I have to say about this is really, I think it's a dark day. Last week was a sad and dark day for not only Texans, but all Americans and really the world. You know, I used to be proud and admired Scott & White and Baylor both. I have family, grandfathers who worked for Scott & White as physicians, nurses in the family who worked for Scott & White. I grew up in the shadows of Scott & White, as you said, went to Baylor undergrad and used to be a source of pride. But last week, it was very sad to see this pendulum. And most people haven't heard this story. Not only was the mandate put out that all the employees need to take this emergency authorized injection, but at the same time, there was a court case where Baylor Scott & White attorneys were denying care to a patient dying in the ICU. The family had reached out to me on behalf of this family member. And I just thought, you know, where have we fallen to as a medical profession? It saddened me for not only the institution of Baylor Scott & White mandating an emergency authorized one size fits all approach to all their employees. And at the same time, the same week, denying care at the family's request in the ICU setting. Really sad, you know, shocking and sad.
Why are they doing this? What motivation does Baylor Scott White and all of these other health systems that we are seeing? I mean, obviously, follow the money, right? I mean, this is about money. Is that
right? You know,
is there any other way to look at it?
Yeah, it's hard not to conclude that. I'm an independent physician. I'm not a part of one of these big institutions anymore. I was in the past. I was asked to leave once I made a decision, follow the truth. But in my experience previously with institutional organizations like this, obviously there are different players involved besides the doctor-patient relationship. You know, the doctor-patient relationship used to be a sacred relationship, and now there's other other folks involved in the decision making and the protocols that are handed down. And doctors are like anyone else. I mean, we have mortgages to pay, we have kids to put through school, and when jobs are on the line, you know, you get in line, and it's unfortunate, but I think that's where we're at as a profession, and I hate to say that.
What can these employees at that medical system and others do? I mean, now I know that you're not an attorney. You're not here to give legal advice. You're a medical doctor. Yeah. The advice that we have heard from, for example, Ali Schultz, who's an attorney, said, look, this is emergency use authorization. It is unlawful. It is 100% unequivocally illegal for any employer to mandate this or to terminate you if you don't. But it's happening out there. Are these people just blatantly violating the rules? Has anybody been fired from Scott and White, to your knowledge, for not subjecting to this inoculation mandate?
Not to my knowledge. My inbox has been flooded at our clinic with requests from Baylor Scott & White employees for me as a medical doctor to sign a medical exemption form. Of course, I can't do that because they're not my patient. If there's a medical reason to be exempt, they need to talk to the primary care physician. Unfortunately, I think a lot of these physicians have fallen in step with the company line. So my recommendation has been to these folks, the religious exemption is probably the way to go. And this is after talking with a few attorneys myself. They think that their advice is to go with the religious exemption. And I would encourage those employees that if you have a deeply held conviction, then write it out and submit that. The attorneys I've talked to said there's a future lawsuit that would be much more winnable if you submit a religious exemption. You know, personally, if I was being asked to do this, if I was employed and my employer was asking me to do this, I would have a deep conviction not to submit to, number one, submit to the spirit of fear, which is behind all this, as you mentioned at the top of the show. But number two, submit to any gene therapy of any sort, which is what this injection is. And number three, I would not want to submit to any medical procedure that included children in the development of it. And that's including unborn children at any process of the development of this medical therapy. So there are multiple grounds from a religious standpoint that are true and heartfelt.
And you don't have to get into ingredients, the suspected aborted fetal tissue, monkey tissue, any of this graphene oxide. You don't have to talk about that. The mark of the beast, 666. You don't have to mention these things in a religious exemption. You just literally put your convictions onto paper, why it right. is that your religious beliefs don't coincide with subjecting yourself to this inoculation.
Yeah. And I would encourage these employees to stand up for your rights and band together. I mean, I can't see a medical institution being able to continue giving good patient care if a significant portion of their employees walk out. And I don't know what the percentages are of Baylor Scott & White employees that have been vaccinated, but from judging from all the messages I'm getting in my clinic, it is substantial.
You're a medical doctor. Let's talk about the injection itself. What have you seen?
We've had patients come into the clinic requesting help with adverse reactions, anything from pain. We have a teacher who, after the injection, experienced significant back pain, numbness in her legs, not paralysis completely, but she's in a wheelchair and can't walk anymore. And prior to this, she was perfectly fine. So we have a lot of desperate patients reaching out to us. And honestly, it's difficult to give them any answers because we simply don't know. As Dr. McCullough's recently stated, there hasn't been a safety briefing, not one, by our government institution over the, you know, he calls for a weekly or monthly update. There's not any. So a lot of this, I mean, these are smart folks. They get online and they do the research. They watch your show and other shows.
Are you concerned about the medical falling out, the fallout? Are you concerned about that with this injection? Do you believe it to be a dangerous injection?
I have to be concerned, Stu, because just too many anecdotal reports, which, you know, doctors aren't really supposed to listen to anecdotal reports. But when I hear about 10 ladies from a Bible study that go and get a vaccine or injection of mm-hmm. this COVID injection, and within a few weeks, five of those 10 have passed away from sudden death, died in their sleep, cardiac arrest, various blood clotting anomalies. You hear enough of these anecdotal reports, you have to be concerned. And then I look to the experts, the developer of the mRNA technology. When he's sounding the alarm on this antibody-dependent enhancement, I'm going to have to listen to that.
Yeah, that ADE is something that we've been talking about here recently as well. And yeah, it's not exclusive to old people either.
To give the benefit of the doubt to Pfizer is unconscionable to me. Most people, I don't think, realize that Pfizer's convicted criminal. I mean, they've paid out record numbers of fees in criminal convictions, $2.3 billion in one fine, $450 million, $60 million, $75 million, $10 million. I mean, the rap sheet just for Pfizer is exceedingly long. So we're dealing with convicted criminals, and we're going to give the benefit of that doubt to that. And then a new emergency authorized technology that in previous animal studies has had tremendous negative adverse events. And then the VAERS system, which as everyone knows now, historically 1 to 10% of the adverse reactions are reported, but even if it's 20 or 50% now, because people actually know about VAERS, most doctors didn't prior to this, I'm afraid, but still I looked at Europe yesterday. We're at 2 million adverse reactions. 50% of those are severe, over 20,000 deaths reported on their VAERS system. And we're at 12,000 in the US. I mean, it's unbelievable. So I don't have any good data to go back to my patients or the folks calling my clinic to combat this kind of data that's out there.
And it's real data. It's not conspiracy theory anymore. It's real data. So, I don't understand these fact checkers and stuff. I mean, I get it. I do, but, I digress. Just for the sake of time, I want to move on here. I got an email. I normally don't do this. I have, by the way, some exclusive video that was sent to me from some meetings at Baylor Scott & White. I have to vet them. I have to review them before I release them publicly. I'm sure that you can appreciate that. But in addition to that, the person who sent me this said, just to highlight in my videos, they said that there's no exemptions for breastfeeding or pregnancy at Baylor Scott & White for the employees. They're perfectly fine with murdering babies. That's what this person wrote in the email. The manager also commented, "We are in competition with the other North Texas healthcare systems to get 100% compliance." Listen to that. 100% compliance. This is a competition now that they're having with other healthcare systems. That's how they see this. "I'm ashamed to work for Baylor. We have 40 in labor and delivery alone at my hospital that plan to walk. The patients are the only people that are going to suffer here as a result of that. I'm having a meeting at my house tonight. I'll let you know how it goes. If you are super busy, just want to get the word out, blah, blah, blah." So they're going to inoculate people that are taking care of pregnant people. They're going to force the inoculation or mandate it for pregnant people or mothers who are new mothers that are breastfeeding. Do you see any medical dangers associated with this?
I sure do, Stu. I mean, going back to the literature, New England Journal of Medicine, June of 2021, there was preliminary data on pregnant ladies that had submitted to the injection early December, January, February. There are 827 women in this study. 700 of those women got the injection in the third trimester. The remaining 127 women had the injection in the first or second trimester. 104 of those 127 had a miscarriage. That was preliminary early data. We need to see more of this, but 104 out of 127, if I have a pregnant lady or a soon-to-be pregnant lady come to me, I don't have any answer to go against that. I mean, I can't believe that an institution would mandate this for anyone who's pregnant, wanting to be pregnant, or even working around pregnant women. Now, Michael Yaden, former VP of Pfizer, I was listening to his presentation yesterday, and he talked about the syncytion 1 protein, which is part of the placenta, and the COVID injection inducing autoantibodies to this placental protein in the first 1 to 4 days. There was a study of 15 women that showed this. I haven't looked at the study myself. I was just listening to Michael Yaden. Now, someone can say, well, that was only 15 people and the amount of antibodies were really small. And well, wait a minute. That's the whole point. We don't have the long term. We don't have duplicated and repeat and long term data on this. So why would we submit our women and children and future unborn children to the unknown? Again, going back to the benefit of the doubt, why would we give the benefit of the doubt and presume safety? That's not how medicine works. That's not how it's ever worked. And I don't know why it would need to work this way now. On top of that, we know that young people under 30 years old, and this was another comment by this was by Thomas Rentz in the same presentation yesterday. He said, for under 30 years old, which a lot of these healthcare workers are, you're substantially, and that's a quote, substantially more likely to die from the injection than you are from COVID. That's Tom Rentz. He has a lot of whistleblower data, and that's a sad state of affairs. And we have to get our data.
I don't even know how they can say, how freedom they can of information. I don't even know how they can calculate that. And I'm sorry to interrupt you, but how can you calculate anymore the probability of dying from COVID? Because how can you even prove that COVID exists? You know, the PCR tests are failed. They only test for one thing. I have documented. One person sent me their results from the same clinic in Florida at the exact same time, had this test. They got a positive result and a negative result. They were mailed both. Yep. They handed them both. They had no explanation for it at all whatsoever, but we know that the PCR tests are corrupted. Now they're talking about variants. How can you have a variant of something that has never been isolated in the first place? So it's my belief that COVID, until you prove that it exists, what we have are people dying from a group of symptoms that are so broad that you can just label it COVID, call it that, and perpetuate a fear narrative. I mean, so, and then how can you vaccinate against something that has never been isolated either? I mean, how do you identify whether or not it's effective if you don't know that the virus exists in the first place? So what is the what is the purpose of the injection? It's not a vaccine. We already know that. It would be false to call it a vaccine just by the definition of the word. It's not approved. It's for these emergency use authorizations only. What is the, if it is a vaccine, what is it protecting against when people still have to wear these masks? They still have to social distance. I think we're almost to the 15th day. Remember that? 15 days to slow the spread, 15 days to flatten the curve. I think we're there. This thing is not going away because this thing is not a virus in and of itself, is it, doctor?
Well, Stu, you've brought up so many great points here. And when patients ask me the exact kind of questions you just asked me, I have to throw my hands up and say, I don't know. I mean, I looked at the experts, like the guy who invented the PCR test, the guy who invented the mRNA technology, and I look at their concerns, a former VP from Pfizer. You know, we have to look at all this. We have to weigh all this. And I can't give legitimate answers when you know, there aren't any to give. There's more questions than there are answers. So in a scenario like that, and we haven't even talked about the early outpatient therapy, which Dr. McCullough has been just such an advocate for, and it's a complete shame, crying shame. I think he should be a Nobel Prize winner, nominee and winner. And I can't believe Scott and White's doing what they're doing with Dr. McCullough. And kudos to him for leading the charge. A lot of us independent doctors, he's really gathered us together and he's led the charge on this early outpatient treatment. And I digress there. Back to your question, what are we vaccinating against? I don't know. You know, the WHO came out a few weeks ago. It was an article that talked about they really support gene alterating therapy. Gene modification, gene editing humans for public health. So when they publicly support a gene altering therapy for public health, you know, that's a big red flag for me. And I think that's what probably this is all about. We're trying to embark on a new
what I think this technology is all about is money. It's no secret that Pfizer was $1 billion ahead of where they are now, billions of dollars ahead of where they are now decades ago. Decades ago, they were making more money than they are right now. In order to get back on the scene, they have to push these injections, and the numbers all check out. And so they have to push these things in order to get back to their profitability. I've got about 2 minutes left, and I've got so many more questions, but why don't you do this? How about your final words? And we're going to have you back again because I enjoy talking to you.
I would say, Stu, first, thanks for having me. It would be naive to think that money's not a part of this. I mean, we're talking billions and billions of dollars. I want to leave with a couple of quotes because this shocked me when I read this. This is Dr. Richard Horton, editor-in-chief formerly of The Lancet. This is from 2015. The Lancet, one of the world's most respected medical journals, quote, "Much of the scientific literature, perhaps half, may simply be untrue, afflicted by studies with small sample sizes, tiny effects, invalid exploratory analysis, and flagrant conflicts of interest, together with an obsession for pursuing fashionable trends of dubious importance. Science has taken a turn towards darkness." That's Richard Horton. Marcia Angel, editor-in-chief of the New England Journal of Medicine, quote, "It is simply no longer possible to believe much of the clinical research that is published or to rely on the judgment of trusted physicians or authoritative medical guidelines. I take no pleasure in this conclusion, which I reached slowly and reluctantly over my 2 decades as editor-in-chief of the New England Journal of Medicine." Stu, I just want to say and encourage those employees of Baylor Scott & White, do not submit to the spirit of fear that's overcome this country. Stand up to your conviction, stand up to the truth, know, God is your source of provision and your source of protection. And if it comes to you having to walk away from the job, that's what happened to me in 2012. God took care of me, though, and he will take care of y'all, too. So hang in there, stand for the truth. And Stu, thank you for the opportunity today to bring some truth and light to the dark world.
That's the gospel. That's the truth. God will never forsake you. He has never forsaken me. Dr. Ben Edwards, thank you for your courage, your bravery. Thank you for being here, standing up for what's right, being responsible in opining. I respect that. If you don't have an answer, you just say you don't have an answer. One guy that does have some answers is coming up next, and we're going to ask him all about that. Stand by for Mike Lindell in 60 seconds. Go nowhere. Dr. Ben Edwards, I wish we had a million more like him. Brave. I hope these doctors are starting to wake up. I hope that nurses and doctors are brave enough to start coming forward. Take the cloak of an anonymity off of you and come forward and expose what is going on. I hate to say this, but we're in times where you can always get another job. There are billions of lives at stake. Humanity is at stake here. You have to come forward. You have to end this. There are people with boots on the ground that are policing these big pharma companies, policing these big healthcare companies, policing these hospitals and these clinics, policing the school board. That's the vaccine police. Christopher Key, you might remember him. He was on the program. I support him, and I believe that you should too. If you feel like you want to support the vaccine police, who's got boots on the ground, they're down at the border. The videos are all over his Telegram account. This guy is like getting on buses, getting in cars, hitchhiking, going all over the country, writing up paperwork, standing before school boards and tyrannical. I mean, this guy is really, really fighting against this overreach. The globalists that are trying to poison and kill you, maim you, handicap you, incapacitate you, make you ill. If you want to support him, go to vaccine-police.com. Again, vaccine-police.com. Give a dollar, give two, give five, give 100,000. Whatever you have, this guy is doing the right thing. He is sticking up for humanity. He is protecting our kids. He's fighting mask mandates in schools. He's fighting the proof of inoculation before you can return to in-person learning at major universities. He's fighting all of it. Go to vaccine-police.com. I've got a ton of confidence in this guy. Vaccine-police.com, vaccine-police.com. Mike Lindell right now. I'm going to get out my mainstream media teleprompter here for a second. I got to read the headlines. That's what we do over here. COVID-19, Delta variant, injection, vaccine, inoculation mandates, masking debates, in-person, distance learning, systemic racism, white supremacy, murderous cops, big tech tyranny, social media censorship. We get it all out. Deplatforming, cancel culture. See, these are just a few of the distractions that have been thrown your way in recent times. Just a few of them. Combine that with solar storms, the threat of a nuclear war, complete and total blackout thanks to massive power grid failures, the wiping out of our entire electronic banking system, falling and failing buildings in Florida, the completely fake and set up so-called insurrection. All of these things have a common denominator. They're all intentionally coming at you with lightning speed in an attempt to distract you from a completely fraudulent and stolen election. January 6th is a distraction away from November 3rd and 4th. You understand that. And when you start to understand that, you'll see things a whole lot more clearly. You'll start to understand what is the real big picture here. Mike Lindell has offered $5 million to anyone, including cyber experts, deep state propagandists, reporters who can disprove the data that he has collected, all of which will be revealed in, 5 days at the Cyber Symposium in Sioux Falls, South Dakota. Lindell joins us now. Mike, thank you so much for being here. I have a theory about you, Mike. You are the most targeted by cancel culture, but yet the least contested, right? Your name and brand have been absolutely dragged down the street, hanged and spit on in the town square, but yet the fact checkers and far left, fringe outlets, Newsweek, Politico, the USA Today, all the whole bunch, while they attack the messenger, it seems nobody has actually contested the message.
You are exactly right, and you're exactly right on your assessment there of these distractions. They want to just crush me and wipe me out. Good example, shame on Fox. I canceled all my ads on Fox, and these are direct response. It's going to cost my company huge money, but you know what? I can't let them be a part of this cancel culture and let this... Everything. That's all they're trying to do is not let me put this out there, these 100% non-subjective packet captures from the whole election. So they're very afraid on the 10th, 11th, and 12th at the symposium. It's all coming out. And when we talk about distractions, Stu, I just want to tell you, this was this morning. Here I get a letter from Governor Brian Kemp, one of the most corrupt governors in the country.
Yeah.
And I can say that because there's a lot of stuff I know that he's done. I don't badmouth like him and Doug Ducey and Brad Rassenberg if I didn't know what they did. And believe me, they did a lot of bad stuff, including obstructing our elections and our audits. But Brian Kemp sends this letter. Urgent, urgent, urgent. Read all about it. Election integrity is under attack. Well, what does he want? Brian Kemp wants money. You know, give us money. You know, they went after Kamala Harris and stuff. Went after, they weaponized and struck down Georgia's Election Integrity Act. But what was that Election Integrity Act? That was all about, okay, signature voting and what a concept and paper ballots and you know, one person, one vote. But they didn't address the machines. They didn't get the deflection against, let's not talk about those $107 million worth of machines you bought, Brian, in 2019. So if you're right, you're exactly right. Every single thing has been a deflection against the real problem is China attacking our country through these machines and taking over our country. And if you remember in November and December, I was on all the media. They're having me on there and I'm going, I didn't know about the machines stuff then. I didn't know about that. I just knew it's impossible that 20 some thousand dead people from Georgia voted or non-residents. I mean, and 8,000 dead people like, and all these, I'm going, how many people can't go out and just commit crimes? It has to be done. They had to use their names with a computer. But all through those, all through November and December, all of a sudden I would go on stations, you know, outlets, that's back when Fox would actually have you on. And they were wanting to talk about Hunter Biden's laptop. I said, this is in December. Who gives anything about Hunter Biden's laptop right now? Why aren't we talking about the 2020 election? You know, you should have talked about his laptop before the election. You know, they're all deflections. That's exactly what they are. And Fox is the worst.
Fox was in on it. They were in on the whole thing. Look at how early they called Arizona. Hundreds of thousands of people still standing in line in Arizona, and they're calling the election.
Yeah, and you're going to see at the symposium what we're doing there. We're running the whole election with the packet captures. So if you're a cyber guy at home, you can actually freeze the frame and pull data off of there because you'll be able to read it. We're doing the whole election. We have all the packet captures and data for the whole election. So that then extrapolates. We have these kiosks with all these computers. So your senators, your politicians are going to be able to go up there, stick in, let's say, I want to know what happened in New Hampshire. So they put it in there, comes out. Gee, Donald Trump takes New Hampshire. Remember, they told us he lost New Hampshire. I'm just giving you a clue what's to come. We have this beautiful board behind us. And we're going to go what really happened on the night of November 3rd, 4th, and the aftermath. We're going to show what Donald Trump, and I've been saying all along, won 80 million to 68 million. Everybody's going to be surprised to see where most of the hacks, and I'm going to give your audience here a little prelude. Where do you think most of the intrusions and the vote flips were in our country? They weren't in all those swing states. California, Washington State, and Oregon. I want you to think, why would they do that, everybody? Well, this was of all 50 states. When China attacked this, it was all 50 states. You don't go to, you know, one state that's normally, you know, this all red or whatever and go, well, I'm going to take all their votes and flip them there. You boil the water. But where could they take the most for the overall vote? In those three states, because everybody says, oh, they're completely blue out there. No, they're not. That's the big lie. The big lie is the big lie, everybody. This has been the biggest, not just the biggest crime in history, but the biggest cover-up. They were very well prepared of what they were going to do and to do this. And it's taken a while. You know, I couldn't figure out, like, let's say it's Nevada, 20-some thousand non-residents vote. You guys, people are good people in general. 20-some thousand people in this election, you look back at all other elections, you don't have that many people. Sure, you're going to have some non-resident try and sneak a vote in, but not 20-some thousand people commit a crime. So what they did, they used the 2010 voter roll, and so those people, they don't live in Nevada anymore. And we're going to have, we're going to show you all that. Dead people. Why is there dead people? Because they died since 2010. And then we're going to show every state. This is interesting. Like my my home state of Minnesota, we have a lot of towns that have shrunk in the farming, in southern Minnesota, farming areas where the towns might have shrunk. Okay, in those places, you have more people that voted than live in the whole county. Well, the reason for that is because they've either left to go to urban areas or you've died. And you guys, this is 100% evidence, 100%. I've spent millions upon millions of dollars to get to this point. What I need now, all of you out there to do, everybody, you have to spread this far and wide to go to frankspeech.com. We need over 1 billion people to watch this. This has to be the biggest watched event in history. We're live streaming 72 hours straight. You know, this is, and if everybody sees what I have, you just have to trust me. When you see this is over. I don't care if it's your liberal friend. I don't care if it's a far left. When they look at this, they're going to go, wow, we need our country protected. Right now, China took our country without firing a bullet.
And you know, this is happening around the world, Mike. There are so many global citizens marching, demonstrating in the streets, rioting as a result of our stolen election. And as you can see, I'm broadcasting live from the People's Republic of Minnesota. So, you know, I understand what happened here. Listen, the down ballot was also equally stolen and was equally, if not more, important, because you can steal a presidential election, put this guy up there, call him the administrator in chief, whatever you want to do. But if everybody below him is a Trump Republican, a MAGA Republican, an America First conservative, how about that?
Right.
He would be ineffective. So stealing the down ballot was equally as important. Does the data reflect that as well?
Yeah, the data. But let me tell you on that. That's when we haven't dug into Michael Vinn all the way down with the all the way down. But I will tell you this: on the senators, both senators in the runoff in Georgia, both Republicans really won. John James won. Jason Lewis in Minnesota won. We'd have a huge Senate if you're a conservative Republican. And we would have had the Congress, and of course Donald Trump would still be there. But I want everyone to know, this just came up. They're going, oh, Mike, you're doing this because you're a conservative or a Republican. Well, I was nothing before. I was an ex-crack addict. You know, yeah. I've been put into this thing. You know, why did I end up with all these packet captures and all these guys brought it to me? Because I have the biggest platform, the biggest mouth, and I'm not going to back down. And I'll tell you. When I went on Jimmy Kimmel, everybody, this is very interesting. You're not going to see this on the news. When I went on Jimmy Kimmel, he said to me on national TV, he said, Mike, would you do this if the shoe was on the other foot, if your friend Donald Trump got put in by the China? And I said, absolutely, I would. I said, this is an attack on our country by China. It doesn't matter who they pick. This is not, I don't care if you're a Democrat, Republican, conservative, liberal. The Democrats warned us of this. We're going to show that. The symposium too. They warned us of this and warned us of it again. Kamala Harris, Amy Klobuchar from Minnesota, they said, you know, that this cyber, even Chris Krebs, but he warned us too late. That was 3 months ago. What happened then is after Jimmy Kimmel, the Washington Post and other outlets came to Minnesota and they went and questioned people that knew me, my friends. They questioned me, you know, it could have been my enemies. I don't know who all they questioned, but I got calls going, people are going around saying, would you, if Donald Trump was in and China had done it the other way that you've been claiming, Mike, would you really do it? Every one of them, Stu, every single one of them said Mike would do it no matter who won that election or who they picked. And so do you think that the Washington Post went out and said, hey, we validated, yes, Mike Lindell would be doing it if it was reversed? Heck no, they didn't go tell anybody that.
And to your point, and you know, being from Minnesota, I've always had a particular interest in Mike Lindell, in MyPillow. Of course, you're a huge business. You support our economy here and around the country, if not globally. You're a huge contributor to that. It's no secret that conservatives are better for entrepreneurs, for business owners. But to your point, you know, you said you went from crack addict to CEO. You wrote the book. I have read the book. It's a fantastic book. If you have not read it, go get it. But Mike, you were not politically invested, number one. And number two, I don't recall you grifting at all. I don't remember one, give me money, send me money to find.
No.
You have spent your own money, which is, I think, by far the very definition of patriotism that I've ever seen. Why are you so targeted?
Well, it's for our country. It's for everybody. You know, we just had a tragedy happen in MyPillow, and we were all together yesterday. These are Democrats, liberals, Republicans, conservatives, blacks, whites, Asians, whatever. We are all together the way it should be. We're not a racist country. That's another big lie. They try and divide and conquer. And we are all one people, and everybody is concerned. Everybody has concern. I've talked to the worst liberals we have or the worst far left we have, and the company, I go, you guys see this now that this is an attack by China? And they go, yeah, we do. And it's been a great uniting. And for me, I've spent all my money. I don't want anyone to ever say, oh, you did it because you wanted for attention or you wanted to gain people's money, such as like this Brian Kemp sending this corrupt letter this morning. That's what politicians do, everybody. Yep. I didn't want anybody. But one thing, when people do donate or give money, and they're, you know, you're on their schedule, kind of like, okay, what are you doing? What are you doing? What are you doing? You know what? I've done everything. That I pray about the stuff I'm supposed to be doing, and that's who I listen to. I don't listen to other people going, well, why didn't you bring this? Here's a good one. Why didn't you bring this evidence sooner? CNN interviewed me for 2.5 hours in Minneapolis about 2 weeks ago. Their hit job is coming out, and we recorded them so they couldn't tell their big lies. One of the recording, they said, well, Mike, we looked at your – I sent them some of the evidence, and we looked at it, and it's really nothing. I said, well, gee, the whole we put out six of this data sheets to the whole country, and everybody looked at it, people, and said, wow, you have more. That's amazing. And CNN, you're the only people that said it was nothing. I said, who did you have look at this? They pulled the guy's name up, and he was some pharmacist or whatever, like a doctor. Sure, a smart guy. And I said, well, why don't you just get a tree surgeon? You need a cyber forensic expert to look at this. Shame on you, CNN. And we continued on with the interview. What we have, I thank CNN, and I thank everyone on the left, because they attack every day. They attack every single day. But at least I get the word out that I have some. Yeah. You know, is it when people like
the
Fox
more they ramp up the attack, the more indication it is that you are telling the truth. They hate the truth. Now,
yeah,
this program started from nothing, and in 4 months, we're ranked number 3 in America at podcasts. Right. I mean, we're up there among some really great company. I think number 2, Steve Bannon, you were just on his show, we're knocking on his door.
Yeah. Yeah.
But there's no secret formula. This is just seeking the truth, exposing the lies, right, and demanding accountability. That's why you've been so targeted.
Absolutely. And they've targeted, you know, a company here. I mean, you know, Dominion sued my company. Of course, we went after them. I mean, everybody, that has nothing to do with what, that's just frivolous. That's a deflection too. What Dominion did was not only a big deflection, but also a big cover up by suing over 200 people or sending them threatening letters.
Well, instead of talking about these people, let's talk about what's really important, which is this upcoming cyber symposium.
Right.
We've got to get 1 billion people to see this thing.
Yep.
No matter what. So we're gonna employ every single patriot that runs. These are the heroes. Okay. This platform. This is the people's bullhorn. Yep. I'm no hero. I just have the microphone in Minneapolis. These people are heroes. They're going to grab this thing and they're going to share it everywhere. I'm employing every single one of them to grab this thing and make sure that people can see it. So where, very simply, can people go? Is it Frank Speech?
Yeah, you're going to go right now. You can go to frankspeech.com. You're going to see a thing on there that you can actually print this off, and you can put it, you can print it off, or you can go to FedEx, and we have the code that's up there. Go in there, give them this code, and you can print off yard signs for your church. Put them underneath people's windshield wipers, whatever. Get the word out that way. But more importantly, everyone share everywhere. Share Frank's speech everywhere and tell them they need to watch this symposium. We need 1 billion people. I'm telling you, I've had all this evidence. The reason I didn't get it out sooner is because they wouldn't let me. Now it's up to all of us. If this symposium comes and they suppress that it didn't even happen, where do we stand? This is 100%, everybody. I've done, gathered it, validated. Everything is going to be there. Anyone that watches this will be all on board with saving our country. I don't care what side of the political aisle they're on. And afterwards, everybody, we're going to be bringing this to the Supreme Court. They're going to pull this down, and Donald Trump will be back in by fall. And, you know, or maybe the Supreme Court, because like you say, to. It affected so many down tickers. They might say, let's do a whole new election, which, by the way, we're unveiling at the symposium a replacement for the machines. We're going to unveil a replacement for the machines. I said before, I said, all those machines, what are we going to do with them? We'll melt them down, make bars out of them, put the people that did this behind bars.
There you go.
It's a perfect placement.
I like it.
And we're giving out this proprietary technology free. So everyone, every company can get it fast because we need it by 2022. But your job, everybody out there, go to frankspeech.com. Tell your friends about it every morning. Share. And we're going to get your promo code, Stu. By the way, everyone wants to know, how do you support? How can you support me and keep buying my products? They've attacked us. I haven't had to lay anybody off yet. And we're helping podcasts and everything like Stu's show here. Use promo code Stu. Go to frankspeech.com. You can get the best pillows on my best prices on all my pillow products. And by the way, we just added today, Stu, we added entrepreneurs there that have USA products on my store platform. Your promo code Stu can get them there. We have flags, all the stuff USA made. You got to get to frankspeech.com, use promo code Stu, or go to mypillow.com, and you'll save up to 66% off these products. These are stuff you're not going to see on TV, that you're even getting more, the best discounts ever, because I have passed the savings from all them box stores, all those cowards that canceled me, all the coward shopping channels, and shame on you, Fox. I want the savings to go right to the customers or right to you out there. And you're doing two things. You're helping support the thing that's going to save this country, and you're getting a great product in return also.
Yeah, wonderful. I can't wait. I'm seriously so excited. We have talked about this. The time is coming, 5 days and counting, till the Cyber Symposium. I know you're a busy guy. We're going to let you go. Mike Lindell, thank you so much for being here. We really appreciate it. Of course. Bye-bye.
Thank you. Hello, I'm Mike Lindell, and I'm coming to you with the most important commercial that I've ever done. All of you know what MyPillow and myself have gone through in the last 5 months in my efforts to bring the truth forward. Well, it's all come down to this. I'm having a cyber symposium on August 10th, 11th, and 12th. This historical event will be live streamed 72 hours straight on my new platform, frankspeech.com. You can help by getting everybody you know to go to frankspeech.com now. To help support this cyber symposium event, I am offering some of the best prices ever on MyPillow products, but they're only offered at frankspeech.com.
Go to frankspeech.com now and use the promo code STU or call 800-262-2403 to receive these exclusive MyPillow offers. Thank you and God bless.
Fear is a real thing. Fear overtakes people. It causes people to do things they would never normally dream of doing, like moving masses of people or convincing them to throw oxygen-inhibiting masks on their children's faces for 5, 6, 7, 8, 10 hours a day. Even outdoors, when they're exercising, people alone in the gym, alone in their cars, outside running, you see it everywhere. It just blows my mind that this is going on. Meanwhile, we have experts, we have medical doctors, we have PhDs, scientists weighing in on all of this. From the inception of COVID-19, there has been this fear pandemic, is the real pandemic, just plaguing the entire world. And this is a global concerted effort to make sure that a needle goes into the arm of every living and breathing human being, including your kids. The push is unbelievable. It's incessant. We saw yesterday the president of the United States, the government, is using your tax dollars to pay influencers thousands of dollars to push this through TikTok so that your kids are warmed up to the idea of becoming inoculated in school. Can you trust the school nurse, for crying out loud? Or is your son going to come home or daughter with a new toy or some sort of a reward saying, oh, look, well, how did you get that? Well, look, I got a Band-Aid. I mean, these are real fears that people are dealing with every day, and it just shouldn't be like that. I mentioned the other day the fear of being attacked. If you're one of those experts, one of those scientists coming forward, weighing on your opinion, one of those people is Dr. Peter McCullough, who's now being sued as a result of his appearance on this program by Baylor Scott & White, a huge health system in Texas. Now, that huge health system in Texas is also on the same day that they announced to the press that they were going to be mandating this inoculation for some odd 50,000 people in that health system, they told the press about this lawsuit prior, by the way, to serving a legal complaint upon Dr. Peter McCullough. So you see where this goes. I mean, this is the narrative. This is pushing fear. This is trying to suppress the opinions of other medical professionals from coming forward. Well, I don't want to get sued. I don't want to get sued. I don't want to lose my job. This is a real thing. People are dealing with hundreds, millions of people, not hundreds of thousands, millions of people in this country are dealing with, if I don't get inoculated, I might lose my job. And it's not just a job for a lot of people, folks. This is a career. People go to school for a very long time. I don't know if you're aware of this or not, but nursing school, medical school, it's so competitive. Just getting in can take years of effort, preparation, studying, grades. I mean, the list goes on. The qualifications to get into these programs, and then they're so small, they're so limited. And then you finally get in only to realize you can't complete this. You can't even enroll. You can't come to campus unless you take this injection in your arm. It's just it's an incessant push. I got an email last night from another nurse that works in the Baylor Scott White medical system. She was telling me that there's no exemption for pregnant people. We have seen the attack on the ovaries, the reproductive systems. We don't know for certain what's in this. We have reported on several studies that have been corroborated by other scientists that these injections, which by the way, inserts are completely blank. That's unprecedented. That doesn't happen. The inserts are blank. There are talks and studies that show lead to graphene oxide. Patents that have been in existence forever. We talked to Dr. David Martin. We talked to a Pfizer whistleblower, a former Pfizer employee. I mean, everything points to poisonous cocktail. I just don't know. Joining me right now is Ben Edwards. He's a medical doctor from Texas. He's the founder and medical director of Veritas Medical in Texas. We really appreciate you being here. Your undergrad is at Baylor. You have a medical degree from UT Houston, residency at McLennan Hospital, or McLennan County Medical Education and Research Foundation, where you were the chief resident, a fellowship in integrative medicine. This is kind of an open dialogue because you're there. Dr. Peter McCullough has been attacked by this system. These shots are being seemingly forced on, 50,000 people? What say you?
Well, Stu, thanks for having me today. What I have to say about this is really, I think it's a dark day. Last week was a sad and dark day for not only Texans, but all Americans and really the world. You know, I used to be proud and admired Scott & White and Baylor both. I have family, grandfathers who worked for Scott & White as physicians, nurses in the family who worked for Scott & White. I grew up in the shadows of Scott & White, as you said, went to Baylor undergrad and used to be a source of pride. But last week, it was very sad to see this pendulum. And most people haven't heard this story. Not only was the mandate put out that all the employees need to take this emergency authorized injection, but at the same time, there was a court case where Baylor Scott & White attorneys were denying care to a patient dying in the ICU. The family had reached out to me on behalf of this family member. And I just thought, you know, where have we fallen to as a medical profession? It saddened me for not only the institution of Baylor Scott & White mandating an emergency authorized one size fits all approach to all their employees. And at the same time, the same week, denying care at the family's request in the ICU setting. Really sad, you know, shocking and sad.
Why are they doing this? What motivation does Baylor Scott White and all of these other health systems that we are seeing? I mean, obviously, follow the money, right? I mean, this is about money. Is that
right? You know,
is there any other way to look at it?
Yeah, it's hard not to conclude that. I'm an independent physician. I'm not a part of one of these big institutions anymore. I was in the past. I was asked to leave once I made a decision, follow the truth. But in my experience previously with institutional organizations like this, obviously there are different players involved besides the doctor-patient relationship. You know, the doctor-patient relationship used to be a sacred relationship. And now there's other folks involved in the decision-making and the protocols that are handed down. And doctors are like anyone else. I mean, we have mortgages to pay. We have kids to put through school. And when jobs are on the line, you know, you get in line, and it's unfortunate, but I think that's where we're at as a profession. And I hate to say that.
What can these employees at that medical system and others do? I mean, now I know that you're not an attorney. You're not here to give legal advice. You're a medical doctor. Yeah. The advice that we have heard from, for example, Allie Schultz, who's an attorney, said, look, this is emergency use authorization. It is unlawful. It is 100% unequivocally illegal for any employer to mandate this or to terminate you if you don't. But it's happening out there. Are these people just blatantly violating the rules? Has anybody been fired from Scott and White, to your knowledge, for not subjecting to this inoculation mandate?
Not to my knowledge. My inbox has been flooded at our clinic with requests from Baylor Scott & White employees for me as a medical doctor to sign a medical exemption form. Of course, I can't do that because they're not my patient. If there's a medical reason to be exempt, they need to talk to the primary care physician. Unfortunately, I think a lot of these physicians have fallen in step with the company line. So my recommendation has been to these folks, the religious exemption is probably the way to go. And this is after talking with a few attorneys myself. They think that their advice is to go with the religious exemption. And I would encourage those employees that if you have a deeply held conviction, then write it out and submit that. The attorneys I've talked to said there's a future lawsuit that would be much more winnable if you submit a religious exemption. You know, personally, if I was being asked to do this, if I was employed and my employer was asking me to do this, I would have a deep conviction not to submit to, number one, submit to the spirit of fear, which is behind all this, as you mentioned at the top of the show. But number two, submit to any gene therapy of any sort, which is what this injection is. And number three, I would not want to submit to any medical procedure that included children in the development of it. And that's including unborn children at any process of the development of this medical therapy. So there are multiple grounds from a religious standpoint that are true and heartfelt.
And you don't have to get into ingredients, the suspected aborted fetal tissue, monkey tissue, any of this graphene oxide. You don't have to talk about that. The mark of the beast, 666. You don't have to mention these things in a religious exemption. You just literally put your convictions onto paper, why it right. is that your religious beliefs don't coincide with subjecting yourself to this inoculation.
Yeah. And I would encourage these employees to stand up for your rights and band together. I mean, I can't see a medical institution being able to continue giving good patient care if a significant portion of their employees walk out. And I don't know what the percentages are of Baylor Scott & White employees that have been vaccinated, but from judging from all the messages I'm getting in my clinic, it is substantial.
You're a medical doctor. Let's talk about the injection itself. What have you seen?
We've had patients come into the clinic requesting help with adverse reactions, anything from pain. We have a teacher who, after the injection, experienced significant back pain, numbness in her legs, not paralysis completely, but she's in a wheelchair and can't walk anymore. And prior to this, she was perfectly fine. So we have a lot of desperate patients reaching out to us. And honestly, it's difficult to give them any answers because we simply don't know. As Dr. McCullough's recently stated, there hasn't been a safety briefing, not one, by our government institution over the, you know, he calls for a weekly or monthly update. There's not any. So a lot of this, I mean, these are smart folks. They get online and they do the research. They watch your show and other shows.
Are you concerned about the medical falling out, the fallout? Are you concerned about that with this injection? Do you believe it to be a dangerous injection?
I have to be concerned, Stu, because too many anecdotal reports, which, you know, doctors aren't really supposed to listen to anecdotal reports. But when I hear about 10 ladies from a Bible study that go and get a vaccine or injection of mm-hmm. this COVID injection, and within a few weeks, five of those 10 have passed away from sudden death, died in their sleep, cardiac arrest, various blood clotting anomalies. You hear enough of these anecdotal reports, you have to be concerned. And then I look to the experts, the developer of the mRNA technology. When he's sounding the alarm on this antibody-dependent enhancement, I'm going to have to listen to that.
Yeah, that ADE is something that we've been talking about here recently as well. And yeah, it's not exclusive to old people either.
To give the benefit of the doubt to Pfizer is unconscionable to me. Most people, I don't think, realize that Pfizer's convicted criminal. I mean, they've paid out record numbers of fees in criminal convictions, $2.3 billion in one fine $450 million, $60 million, $75 million, $10 million. I mean, the rap sheet just for Pfizer is exceedingly long. So we're dealing with convicted criminals, and we're going to give the benefit of that doubt to that. And then a new emergency authorized technology that in previous animal studies has had tremendous negative adverse events. And then the VAERS system, which as everyone knows now, historically 1 to 10% of the adverse reactions are reported, but even if it's 20 or 50% now, because people actually know about VAERS, most doctors didn't prior to this, I'm afraid. But still, I looked at Europe yesterday. We're at 2 million adverse reactions. 50% of those are severe. Over 20,000 deaths reported on their VAERS system, and we're at 12,000 in the U.S. I mean, it's unbelievable. So I don't have any good data to go back to my patients or the folks calling my clinic to combat this kind of data that's out there.
And it's real data. It's crickets. Mean, it's not conspiracy theory anymore. It's real data. So, you know, I don't understand these fact checkers and stuff. I mean, I get it. I do, but I digress. Just for the sake of time, I want to move on here. I got an email. I normally don't do this. I have, by the way, some exclusive video that was sent to me from some meetings at Baylor Scott & White. I have to vet them. I have to review them before I release them publicly. I'm sure that you can appreciate that. But in addition to that, the person who sent me this said, just to highlight in my videos, they said that there's no exemptions for breastfeeding or pregnancy at Baylor Scott & White for the employees. They're perfectly fine with murdering babies. That's what this person wrote in the email. The manager also commented, "We are in competition with the other North Texas healthcare systems to get 100% compliance." Listen to that. 100% compliance. This is a competition now that they're having with other healthcare systems. That's how they see this. "I'm ashamed to work for Baylor. We have 40 in labor and delivery alone at my hospital that plan to walk. The patients are the only people that are going to suffer here as a result of that. I'm having a meeting at my house tonight. I'll let you know how it goes. If you are super busy, just want to get the word out, blah, blah, blah." So, okay. So they're going to inoculate people that are taking care of pregnant people. They're going to force the inoculation or mandate it for pregnant people or mothers who are new mothers that are breastfeeding. Do you see any medical dangers associated with this?
I sure do, Stu. I mean, going back to the literature, New England Journal of Medicine, June of 2021, there was preliminary data on pregnant ladies that had submitted to the injection early December, January, February. There are 827 women in this study. 700 of those women got the injection in the third trimester. The remaining 127 women had the injection in the first or second trimester. 104 of those 127 had a miscarriage. That was preliminary early data. We need to see more of this, but 104 out of 127, if I have a pregnant lady or a soon-to-be pregnant lady come to me, I don't have any answer to go against that. I mean, I can't believe that an institution would mandate this for anyone who's pregnant, wanting to be pregnant, or even working around pregnant women. Now, Michael Yaden, former VP of Pfizer, I was listening to a presentation yesterday, and he talked about the syncytion 1 protein, which is part of the placenta, and the COVID injection inducing autoantibodies to this placental protein in the first 1 to 4 days. There was a study of 15 women that showed this. I haven't looked at the study myself. I was just listening to Michael Yaden. Now, someone can say, well, that was only 15 people, and the amount of antibodies were really small. And well, wait a minute. That's the whole point. We don't have the long-term. We don't have duplicated and repeat and long-term data on this. So why would we submit our women and children and future unborn children to the unknown? Again, going back to the benefit of the doubt, why would we give the benefit of the doubt and presume safety? That's not how medicine works. That's not how it's ever worked. And I don't know why it would need to work this way now. On top of that, we know that young people under 30 years old, and this was another comment by this was by Thomas Rentz in the same presentation yesterday. He said, for under 30 years old, which a lot of these healthcare workers are, you're substantially, and that's a quote, substantially more likely to die from the injection than you are from COVID. That's Tom Rentz. He has a lot of whistleblower data, and that's a sad state of affairs. And we have to get our data.
I don't even know how they can say how freedom they can calculate. Of information. I don't even know how they can calculate that. And I'm sorry to interrupt you, but how can you calculate anymore the probability of dying from COVID? Because how can you even prove that COVID exists? You know, the PCR tests are failed. They only test for one thing. I have documented. One person sent me their results from the same clinic in Florida at the exact same time, had this test. They got a positive result and a negative result. They were mailed both. Yep. They handed them both. They had no explanation for it at all whatsoever, but we know that the PCR tests are corrupted. Now they're talking about variants. How can you have a variant of something that has never been isolated in the first place? So it's my belief that COVID, until you prove that it exists, what we have are people dying from a group of symptoms that are so broad that you can just label it COVID, call it that, and perpetuate a fear narrative. I mean, yeah. So, and then how can you vaccinate against something that has never been isolated either? I mean, how do you identify whether or not it's effective if you don't know that the virus exists in the first place? So what is the, what is the purpose of the injection? It's not a vaccine. We already know that. It would be false to call it a vaccine just by the definition of the word. It's not approved. It's for these emergency use authorizations only. What is the, if it is a vaccine, what is it protecting against when people still have to wear these masks? They still have to social distance. I think we're almost to the 15th day. Remember that? 15 days to slow the spread, 15 days to flatten the curve. I think we're there. This thing is not going away because this thing is not a virus in and of itself, is it, doctor?
Well, Stu, you've brought up so many great points here. And when patients ask me the exact kind of questions you just asked me, I have to throw my hands up and say, I don't know. I mean, I look to the experts, like the guy who invented the PCR test, the guy who invented the mRNA technology, and I look at their concerns, a former VP from Pfizer. You know, we have to look at all this. We have to weigh all this. And I can't give legitimate answers when you know, there aren't any to give. There's more questions than there are answers. So in a scenario like that, and we haven't even talked about the early outpatient therapy, which Dr. McCullough has been just such an advocate for, and it's a complete shame, crying shame. I think should be a Nobel Prize winner, and I can't believe Scott and White's doing what they're doing with Dr. McCullough. And kudos to him for leading the charge. A lot of us independent doctors, he's really gathered us together and he's led the charge on this early outpatient treatment. And I digress there. Back to your question, what are we vaccinating against? I don't know. You know, the WHO came out a few weeks ago. It was an article that talked about they really support gene alterating therapy. Gene modification, gene editing humans for public health. So when they publicly support a gene altering therapy for public health, you know, that's a big red flag for me. And I think that's what probably this is all about. We're trying to embark on a new
what I think this technology is all about is money. It's no secret that Pfizer was $1 billion ahead of where they are now, billions of dollars ahead of where they are now decades ago. They were making more money than they are right now. In order to get back on the scene, they have to push these injections, and the numbers all check out. And so they have to push these things in order to get back to their profitability. I've got about 2 minutes left, and I've got so many more questions, but why don't you do this? How about your final words? And we're going to have you back again because I enjoy talking to you.
I would say, Stu, first, thanks for having me. It would be naive to think that money's not a part of this. I mean, we're talking billions and billions of dollars. I want to leave with a couple of quotes because this shocked me when I read this. This is Dr. Richard Horton, editor-in-chief formerly of The Lancet. This is from 2015. The Lancet, one of the world's most respected medical journals, quote, "Much of the scientific literature, perhaps half, may simply be untrue, afflicted by studies with small sample sizes, tiny effects, invalid exploratory analysis, and flagrant conflicts of interest, together with an obsession for pursuing fashionable trends of dubious importance. Science has taken a turn towards darkness." That's Richard Horton. Marcia Angel, editor-in-chief of the New England Journal of Medicine, quote, "It is simply no longer possible to believe much of the clinical research that is published or to rely on the judgment of trusted physicians or authoritative medical guidelines. I take no pleasure in this conclusion, which I reached slowly and reluctantly over my 2 decades as editor-in-chief of the New England Journal of Medicine." Stu, I just want to say and encourage those employees of Baylor Scott & White, do not submit to the spirit of fear that's overcome this country. Stand up to your conviction, stand up to the truth. You know, God is your source of provision and your source of protection. And if it comes to you having to walk away from the job, that's what happened to me in 2012. God took care of me though, and he will take care of y'all too. So hang in there, stand for the truth. And Stu, thank you for the opportunity today to bring some truth and light to the dark world.
That's the gospel. That's the truth. God will never forsake you. He has never forsaken me. Dr. Ben Edwards, thank you for your courage, your bravery. Thank you for being here, standing up for what's right, being responsible in opining. I respect that. If you don't have an answer, you just say you don't have an answer. One guy that does have some answers is coming up next, and we're going to ask him all about that. Stand by for Mike Lindell in 60 seconds. Go nowhere. Dr. Ben Edwards, I wish we had a million more like him. Brave. I hope these doctors are starting to wake up. I hope that nurses and doctors are brave enough to start coming forward. Take the cloak of an anonymity off of you and come forward and expose what is going on. I hate to say this, but we're in times where you can always get another job. There are billions of lives at stake. Humanity is at stake here. You have to come forward. You have to end this. There are people with boots on the ground that are policing these big pharma companies, policing these big healthcare companies, policing these hospitals and these clinics, policing the school board. That's the vaccine police. Christopher Key, you might remember him. He was on the program. I support him, and I believe that you should too. If you feel like you want to support the vaccine police, who's got boots on the ground, they're down at the border. The videos are all over his Telegram account. This guy is like getting on buses, getting in cars, hitchhiking, going all over the country, writing up paperwork, standing before school boards and tyrannical. I mean, this guy is really, really fighting against this overreach. The globalists that are trying to poison and kill you, maim you, handicap you, incapacitate you, make you ill. If you want to support him, go to vaccine-police.com. Again, vaccine-police.com. Give a dollar, give two, give five, give $100,000. Whatever you have, this guy is doing the right thing. He is sticking up for humanity. He is protecting our kids. He's fighting mask mandates in schools. He's fighting the proof of inoculation before you can return to in-person learning at major universities. He's fighting all of it. Go to vaccine-police.com. I've got a ton of confidence in this guy. Hey, it's Stu Peters for Cortez Wealth Management. Cortez Wealth Management is the premier sponsor here on the Stu Peters Show because we believe in the products. Carlos Cortez, the founder and CEO, he cares about our constitutional republic. He is a patriot. He's a father. He's a husband. He's a family man. He's a God-fearing family man. That is the most important. Do business with one of those guys, not one of these communists that works for the big box chains. And maybe the guy that you use, Bob, Larry, maybe the gal, Susan or Sally, that works at one of these big banks, one of these huge conglomerates that's corporately, maybe they're good people. Maybe they're your neighbors. You go out for a beer with them, or maybe you're on their bowling league. That's fine. But by virtue, to no fault of their own, they're communist. And the reason being is because the programs that they offer you are limited to whatever Wall Street will approve. Wall Street is dictated and manipulated by the Biden-installed fake phony regime, which sold out long ago to China. So the direct result is your financial advisor, the person that you depend on to secure the future for your kids, is by all intents and purposes a communist, to no fault of their own, of course. So do business with Cortez Wealth Management. Do business with a God-fearing patriot. Do business with a family man. You can call Carlos Cortez anytime at 813-448-3446 or visit him online at CortezWM.com. Again, that's CortezWM.com. Until tomorrow at 6 p.m. Eastern, here's what's up to it. Here's what's down to it. Here's to any way that you can get to it. Here's to those that don't do it, maybe be dragged to it, tied to it, or forced to it. And here's to us who do it, because we're the ones that's used to it. Folks, remember to fly low and avoid the radar. And remember, one day they're going to come for the car. And when they do, save the